Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Oh, listen to this. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. We got lots to talk about. We've already had a great show this morning talking about all sorts of things, everything from raccoons to caterpillars to trees. Hey, we're back to this tree situation. Let's talk about trees for a minute. Let's make sure you understand trees.
Well,
we've already said this, and Chris France is going to be with us this morning. Peter Toler is going to be on this morning. So we got a lot to say about trees and a particular situation that's developing in Mobile right now. It's drama. It's high tree drama. And we got folks saying, oh, you can never cut a tree. Everything above ground is sacrosanct. And then we got some other folks who are doing everything they can to protect these trees. How do we deal with this? How do we deal with this? Chris is here. Is Peter? Peter's here.
Good morning, Bill.
How are y'all? Peter is our city forester, effectively. Peter, give me your correct title because I always never quite do it correctly. But you're city forester, correct?
Yes. People call it the urban forester. That's what's referred to in city code.
Yep, good. So that's what Peter does. He's in charge of that whole department. He just got back from inspecting a tree this morning out on, well, it was a big dead tree called a power pole that caused some damage to some other trees. That thing working out okay?
Yeah, a Nissan Maxima apparently decided to cut down 7 trees on Old Shell Road and a power pole this morning, so we had to clean that entire mess out of the roadway.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened. Boy, what a mess. The power pole had a transformer on it, and it's just hanging in midair. Ooh, gosh, I'd hate to have to fix that. That's a mess. And the guy who's driving the Maxima, is he okay?
Believe it or not, the driver of the Maxima escaped without a scratch.
So he was kind of loosey-goosey is kind of the... So that's good. But here's another thing. There's this other tree, and I'm going to tell what I know, and then I'm going to let Peter tell what he knows, and then Chris is going to weigh in on this. But there's a tree in downtown Mobile, surrounded by a lot of other live oaks. It's a live oak. We tend to make a lot of live oaks here, even though live oaks are kind of, you know, we probably got too many live oaks. I'll just say it out loud because we're going to have disease problems. Because we haven't been very thoughtful about how to keep live oaks healthy. But there's a bunch of live oaks on a little lot in Church Street midtown downtown Mobile. We'll call this downtown. And there's a family who wants to move in, build a house on a city-sized lot, 50 by 100 and something, 50 by 100 feet, in downtown Mobile. And they have done everything they can. Now, y'all correct me if I'm wrong about this, but as nearly as I can tell, they bent over backwards to protect the trees. They did something that I encourage everybody to do because I think it makes sense from lots of perspectives. They actually built their house on piers. Now, why does that make a difference? Well, because the most important thing you got to know about protecting a tree is you got to protect the roots. And in the days we used to put houses on piers and not slabs, we allowed the roots plenty of room to move through the yard without cutting off all the roots. Man, they did they went the extra step. They built their house on piers. And then when it came to putting in a driveway, they had to decide, okay, we need to put a driveway in because we need to get our car off the street because that's a narrow street there. Both streets are very narrow. It would impede traffic. We need to get our car off the street. How do we do that? Well, they could take the driveway, which is what most people would do, and they would just run it between the two trees and cut off all the roots. And then those two trees on either side would have a lingering death. and caused big problems for a long time. And instead, they said, you know, the best solution here is for us to take out a tree that is in not such good health anyway, and that's kind of marginal. It could probably survive. It's a live oak. But that may be the best way to do it. It's the one of the most sensible, thoughtful building projects I've been around in a long time. And let me tell you, there's a lot of bad building projects when it comes to trees out there. I've seen them happen. They happen all around me all the time. This one is incredibly thoughtful. But now people are upset because they want to cut down that one tree. Peter, did I describe this situation correctly?
Absolutely, Bill. This one city block, another purpose of coming on is to teach the process of this, but to get to the subject, there the whole corner at this location is lined with live oaks, 40-inch diameter and above. They actually hired an arborist to look at the entire site, formulate a plan to preserve the existing root systems on the trees that are intended to be retained. They found one tree out of all of them that has an extensive amount of deadwood, and might add large diameter deadwood, that once all this wood would be removed anyways, would not aesthetically please the neighborhood, nor would it be the best thing for the tree. I will agree with you. Yes, the tree probably would survive because it's a live oak, but to go into the lot, you have to have access of some form.
Yeah. So right now we've got a situation. Did the city approve the removal of the tree? Did the tree commission approve removal of the tree?
Yeah, the tree commission did approve removal of said tree. Yes.
Yep.
I think it's important. So, I think it's important, Bill, to note that there is the urban forester who attends the tree commission as the staff representative, but there is a body of tree commission appointees,
right, thank you,
that sit on the board that, yeah, do make the final decision. I'm sorry.
We're going to come back to that tree commission in just a minute. Yeah, no, you're right, and thank you for clarifying that. So we have a city forester, and then we've got a who makes recommendations, and the tree commission makes final decisions, which it passes on to the city council. In this case, there's been a threat to appeal it to the city council. Is that correct, or to appeal the decision first to the tree commission?
Yes, this decision has been formally appealed to the city council.
City council.
Yes.
So the city council, and then the threat is, and this comes from a buddy of mine, I'll have to say, Jim, I think, am I right in that the neighbor of this tree, of this lot, has threatened to chain himself to the tree if the city council approves its removal.
That is rumor. I have heard that. I would have to check to confirm that it was a neighbor that did appeal it, but I believe so.
Yeah. So, any rate, we'll see what happens. I don't know, and I haven't talked to that person, so I don't know exactly what's going on. But it's high drama. So, Chris Francis, you tell me why they didn't just run the driveway between two of those big old trees.
Well, so that happens all the time. And immediately, it's not normally a problem. So you may see this fairly soon. You may see this, as a result of a failure of the tree. You may see the tree really suffering. But ultimately, the roots from those trees are going to extend a long ways, like we talked about earlier. And then cutting into those roots is going to affect the health and the structure of the tree. But as you get so close to the trunk of the tree, especially a 40-plus inch diameter tree, you're cutting just a few feet away from that trunk. Man, that is a major problem, and that's what we call the structural root plate, in that if you cut in that area, then you pretty much guarantee that that tree is going to fail as a result of that. And it may not be immediate. It may be a decade later. But it takes a while for decay to move in. It takes a while for things to settle out and to have that tree fail. But, yeah, not a good idea to be cutting roots that close to the tree.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you see it all the time. And a lot of people call me and say, gosh, you know, suddenly my tree, all these, I got all this limb dieback on the top of my tree. And I look and there's a brand new driveway. Or I look and there's, boy, that's where they installed an irrigation system. And they just slice down through those roots. New sidewalks, new driveways, all these things we don't think about. They have a huge impact on the tree. And that tree is going to have an effect on you. We're going to come back and talk about that pretty soon, as soon as we get through with this little break.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday Morning with Plain Gardening. Give us a call, 251-343-0106. We're on a big tree rant here. We got tree drama in Mobile. But I wanted to jump in real quick because we missed JR. I feel bad about it. JR called earlier about Bermuda grass. There's two questions to ask about Bermuda grass. One, how do you make it grow? That's hard. The other question is, how do you keep it from growing? That's hard too. It's a crazy thing about Bermuda grass. It's just a pain no matter which way you look at it. Common Bermuda invades yards. It never really dominates, but it does invade yards. If you like a nice evenly colored yard or evenly textured yard, it can be an annoying thing. On the other hand, if you try to grow Bermuda grass as a dominant grass, it almost never survives on the Gulf Coast. It has big problems. It's very difficult to grow by itself. Let me just mention quickly, if you've got centipede and Bermuda grass invasions, it can be very difficult. It can be very difficult. The best thing to do, though, is to raise your lawnmower to 2.5 inches this time of year. That will give that centipede a little bit of an opportunity to compete better with the Bermuda grass. If you've got St. Augustine and Bermuda grass invasions, it's usually pretty simple. Keep your St. Augustine grass at 4 inches. There's no way Bermuda grass is going to compete with St. Augustine at 4 inches. If you get a bare spot in the St. Augustine, you might get some Bermuda grass there, but it's not going to compete with the St. Augustine. So there it is. If you've got a mixture of centipede and St. Augustine, just raise the lawnmower. That's the best way to do it. And then when you see a little patch of Bermuda grass, you know what you do? You go in and get some iced tea and a cold glass with a little lemon in it. Sit down and enjoy the tea. That's how you do it. Don't worry too much about little patches of Bermuda grass. Hey, folks, we're back here on the trees. And so there's a tree. There's a tree. There's always a tree in Mobile that somebody's worried about. And it's a good thing we worry about them. We have a great canopy. We're making a lot of mistakes with it. We're going to lose a lot of that canopy if we're not careful, and we're not going to lose it to development as much as we are to just can I use the word out loud? Stupidity. I did it. I said it. Because we don't understand how trees work, and trees have a huge root system. Peter, you just said you saw a tree with a root system that spread over what? How many? Tell me that story you just told me on Monterey Street.
Yeah, when Monterey Street was being redone, we actually tracked live oak roots that extended 3 city blocks. So that's how far, man, the root system of one of these big trees can actually go.
Yeah, so we're always damaging the tree roots. We're always damaging the tree roots. But and you know, no matter what you do in your yard, you stomp hard. And you're impacting a tree root, particularly if the ground's wet, because it actually compacts the soil right there. But listen, what's important is within a certain distance of the tree, we really have to worry about something called structural roots that hold the tree upright. And what is that distance? Let's, you know, this is a hard question. I know it's a hard question because a lot of people have tried to answer it. But what is the distance we want to avoid when we're looking at structural roots? Chris, help us.
I have the answer. I have the answer. It depends. Right. So, and that is a tough term to define. It's been attempted by several scientists and, you know, looking at different ways. It's tough to get an actual measurement of that. But you could safely say on a tree 36 diameter plus, you're probably looking 12 feet, something like that. And you start going inside that and you're going to have major problems. But it does depend on the tree, its vigor, its vitality, you know, obviously the size, the configuration of the root system. So it may have some really strong roots on one side and not a lot of rooting on the other. And so it does depend, but it's hard to define. And so that's one of those things where, you know, you can't call up a surgeon and say, hey, where do I cut? Well, I need to see the patient. You know, we need to kind of see what's going on, and we need to address that, you know, individually.
Yeah, so, but I'm liking that number. I mean, you know, we know it's a little arbitrary, but for most live oaks, I think we want to keep a root space around that live oak that's about 25 feet, not 25 feet from the tree, but, you know, it sounds like about 12 feet out from either side. That's pretty good. That's actually effectively 30 feet. That we're keeping a space around each tree. And we know that within that 30-foot square with the tree at the center of it, we know that there's potential for affecting the growth of that tree and even the ability for that tree to stand up. So we had a caller earlier in the show, Chris, and she was a really nice lady, Mary, who's got a live oak that's growing along a fence line, and the owner wants her to cut the roots of that tree on his side of the fence because he wants to build the fence back and he doesn't want the roots to affect the fence. Now, there's a simple way to build a fence so that it's not affected by the roots. We agreed. But what happens if she cuts the roots within, say, 2 feet of that tree on his side?
All right, so roots have properties of compression and tension. So it's not exactly like a rope, but we'll use that analogy. But you get a little bit of strength in compression. So there is some increased likelihood of that tree failing toward the cut, but it's a very small percentage. More like, think of a rope. You can push on the rope all you want. You're not really doing much. But pull on the rope, that's where the strength comes from, and that's the tension part. That's where that root is holding that tree from going away from where you're pulling. So you cut those roots on the neighbor's side, it's fallen to her side. And so that's where we see a lot of these problems where somebody cuts roots through a number of reasons, irrigation system, utilities, grade changes, all sorts of things, and then the tree fails away from that cut root. And so, you know, if that's running between, say, you've got a street, a tree, and a house, and you cut on the street side, then you're increasing the likelihood of failure towards your house. And so that's obviously a really, really bad idea.
Yeah, you know, and Peter, there are exceptions, but an awful lot of trees we've seen lately, I mean, they could have fallen in any direction. But a lot of the trees we've seen fall in Midtown, they fell towards the house.
Yes. Yes.
They didn't fall in the street. They fell towards the house. Why is that?
Well, the last couple of trees that fell, Bill, had what was called an asymmetrical root system to where there was no green space on the street side. So the root system just establishes on one side. And then if your canopy outraces the support of the roots, then sheer physics takes over and the tree topples over with the right amount of wind resistance.
Yep, and so this is a big issue. We got to think about it a lot, and we got to control that. Listen to what Peter said. Listen to what Chris said. It's when you cut those supporting roots, the tree is gonna go. It's much more likely to go down. You know, for a lot of trees too, I'll add, it's not just the support that's cut, it's the barrier that the tree has to infection. So when you cut those roots, and live oaks have a better infection protection system than most trees, but even with live oaks, certainly with water oaks, certainly with a lot of other trees, when you cut those roots, and they're big roots, if they're roots of any size, it's like you've cut into that tree's infection, disease prevention barrier. And once you do that, that root becomes much more susceptible to rot. Am I making that up?
No, not at all. And that's proven time and time again, where you'll have decay progress as a result of that root cutting. And so live oaks really have a great ability to compartmentalize. They're amazing trees, but they are still susceptible to some of that decay. But where we really see a lot of those problems is in the water oaks and the laurel oaks, where they're super susceptible and they just don't have that ability to compartmentalize. And so that's where we really see a lot of failures, maybe a few years after those root cuts, not as a direct result of cutting the root, but then as the decay that was allowed to move its way and then basically chew up the rest of the root system to where there's just nothing left.
Yeah, and it, that's important to remember. There are trees I love. I love hickories. Man, do I love hickories. I mean, they're great all the way around. But, boy, are they sensitive. They just are incredibly sensitive to root damage. And so when you do root damage on a hickory, that rot can tend to spread throughout the tree. It's certainly true for trees that are less close to my heart, like water oak and laurel oaks. But I like them just fine, except they're so prone to damage to the roots. And when you do any damage, it spreads through the whole tree. The size of the roots can make a difference, right, in terms of its ability to fight infection. Is that true?
That is true. And typically the smaller roots are going to regenerate. It's when they get heartwood, the larger roots are going to be a lot more susceptible.
We got to take a break. We got a lot in on that discussion. We're going to come back and talk about it a little more. Hey, give us a call this morning, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay, so we made such a big deal out of these roots, guys. We've been talking about roots and trees and protecting these tree roots, and we said that the tree roots go all over, they go all over creation, not straight down to China. They get there laterally, So that tree in your yard in Mobile, it's got roots over in China, but not because it grows straight down, but because it grows laterally, it grows horizontally, and they grow really far. So how are we going to, how do we build a house around, how do we build sidewalks around this? What can you do to avoid damage to the roots, Chris?
So the ideal thing is to not do anything. Leave it alone. Don't build a house. Don't build a sidewalk. Don't put in utilities. Just leave it alone. But we live, in the city. We're not in the middle of the forest. So we have to find ways to work around that. And so when we need to get things from point A to point B, rather than digging a trench, we need to look at a way, how can we go from point A to point B without damaging roots? And so knowing what we know about roots is they do spread out laterally, and very few of them go deep. We can go under the root system. And so how do you get under the root system without, without cutting the top of it off? Because, let's say like power or gas, they're going to want to go 36 inches down. There's very few roots down there at that depth. So cutting the roots on the surface, we don't need to cut those roots on the surface to get that line in, but they're just trying to get down to that depth that they want. And so boring is an option. Most utility companies will offer that, and there is an added expense. It's a bigger pain for them to do versus trenching it in. But if you plan in advance, now don't wait till they show up and say, hey, we're here to put your power line in. Oh, by the way, I want it bored. That's not going to work out too well. You got to plan in advance. So they can bore that in. They go under the root system. Another would be using air excavation. And a lot of people don't know what that is, but it's basically like a pressure washer, but it blows air instead of water. And so blowing that air and removing the soil around the roots, it exposes the root system And then you can go underneath those roots to put in whatever you need, whether it's a pipe or conduit or wire or whatever it is. And then the roots are still there. You just cover the whole thing back up. And so, you know, there is some added expense to those, but ultimately planning is going to be the way. And so don't just assume, hey, the only way to get through is from point A to point B. And also don't assume that the guys doing the work understand trees. Most of the people installing irrigation systems, utilities, you know, putting things in underground, whether it's a retaining wall or building a house, they don't understand trees. They don't know how trees work. They don't know how they grow. They're just trying to do their job. They're not malicious. They're not trying to tear them up, but they don't understand trees. So you got to get an arborist involved early on in the design phase so that you can plan for those things.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that's really cool. You know, the fiber optics people, when they put the new fiber optics in downtown, and they mostly did a pretty good job. There's some exceptions, but they mostly did a pretty good job. And they essentially blew that in. They didn't trench at the top. They would start at one end of the block. They'd run the fiber optic cable in at one end of the block and then run it underground beneath the tree roots, and then it would run out at the other end. Amazing how they did it, but they were incredibly good at doing it. And it can be done with these kinds of things. But in this case, we had a driveway. So we can't obviously dig the driveway under the roots. The driveway has to go on top of the roots. And so what do we do then? And so, Peter, tell me, what was your safe zone around these trees? Why couldn't they build a driveway just between the two trees?
Well, Bill, my safe zone for any tree, and I'm going to speak hypothetically, the average diameter of the trees at this location was roughly 40 inches at 4.5 feet. So my formula that I recommend anybody is take the diameter, divide it by 2, and convert that to feet. So you're looking at each tree roughly 20 feet in all directions around the tree that you really and truly don't need to disturb, don't need to compact, don't need to do anything to it. So with that being said, we're in a pretty cramped area. We found the tree that was the least of the eight, and with the amount of deadwood, and might I add, hot, large diameter deadwood that needed to come out of the tree, you were pretty much going to be left with a totem pole. If there was no building project there and we were doing our routine maintenance down the roadway, the deadwood would need to come out of this tree anyways, and then the decision would probably be made after that anyways. So, yeah, this tree biologically was still alive. After further examination, found it's filled with concrete. Don't know if any more extensive problems are going on after that. But that 20-foot zone outside of each tree is pretty much the deciding factor on this. Because, Chris, I'm sure you'll agree with this. Soil compaction is one of your number one killers of urban trees.
Yeah, soil compaction and the trenching, you know, both of those. And both of those can be prevented and, in some cases, alleviated. But it's tough. It's a lot easier to prevent it. And so, you know, one thing we haven't really talked about much is fencing, though. That fencing ahead of the construction to make sure that somebody doesn't go in that area and damage something, that's huge. It's huge. And you can't use the yellow or orange plastic fencing because people just move it out of the way. You got to use something strong. You got to use chain link, something like that. Just keep them out of that area.
Bill, I think it's a very important note in this, what Chris and I are both saying. A lot of tree arguments that happen in Mobile are aesthetic arguments. This is not an aesthetic argument. This is a national standard we're talking about, and this is tree risk management. This is learning how to lessen the risk of a tree failing and striking a structure, a person, or a property, or something of that nature.
Yeah, and you know, I'm looking at this picture of this tree, and it's got, when Peter says it has a lot of dead wood, he ain't kidding, folks. It's got huge portions of major limbs, and I'm saying, when I say limbs, these limbs are, you know, two feet in diameter. They're gigantic. I mean, they're the size of most trunks. And huge pieces of those limbs are just bare. Huge, you know, the whole sides are just bare of wood. it's a tree that's undergone a lot of stress. I can imagine why it happened. But it has suffered a lot of work. The trunk itself has huge areas that are just free of bark, if you'll allow me to say. It's just bare. It's just down to bare wood. It is a little bit of a scary tree. It is a little bit of a scary tree. And you can also see that it's very close to the, it's caught between the sidewalk and the street. I imagine that its root system on the street side is probably compromised at least a little bit. It's a weird tree. So using Peter's rule about this 20-foot rule around a tree, well, let's just even using 15-foot rule or a 12-foot rule, you don't have any choice to put a driveway between two trees. Even with things like gravel, and you know, I think most people aren't willing to do gravel for their driveways. I wish they were. It makes a lot more sense in some cases than concrete, particularly in an urban area that has a lot of runoff problems like Mobile does, a lot of rain problems. The more completely impervious surface you put there, the worse the runoff is for everybody. It would make a lot of sense to use gravel driveways in most cases. But even a gravel driveway within the zone of those important tree roots can begin to cause compaction and cause problems. It's a better thing. And you know, looking at this street, we really probably can't put gravel in the whole distance. We're still going to have to put in concrete because we have to make that leap from the road onto the property. So, these things to think about, and really important to think about. Listen, when we're making these decisions, and I want to get to this real quickly. When we're making these decisions, the city forester, that's Peter, and he's gotten the great thing. Thank you, Mayor. The mayor of our city is providing two additional arborists to work with Peter. Am I understanding that correct?
Yes. Correctly, yes, Peter, there are. Starting tomorrow, we will have two additional ISA certified arborists on the urban forestry staff for the city of Mobile, and we are beyond excited to add two more professional people to our staff.
We have a huge amount of tree work that has to be done in Mobile, more than most cities, because we try to protect our trees and because we have more of them. And we've had a small staff. We've really got to beef up the staff. The mayor's doing that. That is great. To have certified arborists on staff who can go out and address these things, this is huge. We're very pleased about this. So Peter and the certified arborists are out there making decisions, making recommendations, but if there's an issue, it has to go before something we call the Tree Commission, and the Tree Commission, Peter, is full of tree experts. Is this correct?
Currently on the Tree Commission, there is one ISA certified arborist out of the seven people on the commission.
One ISA. So we have one person. The other people, they have a lot of background in tree work or other things?
No, sir. They're doctors, lawyers, accountants, things of that nature.
So how do they get on the Tree Commission?
They're appointed.
Yeah. So here's a big problem. Your tree commission, the people who are making decisions about what happens to trees, there's one certified arborist. That's a great thing. He's going to be on there forever. Isn't that right, Peter?
No, unfortunately, as in September will be his last meeting with the tree commission.
Clee Formwalt, great friend of mine. The dean, as we like to say, of arborist in Mobile. I mean,
the grand
Clee
poobah.
Pioneered a lot. Oh, man. What a guy. And he's going to go off the tree commission. We're going to put another arborist on there. Ooh, that's a big question. We're going to come back and talk about that when we get back.
Because everything you're going to get down. On your bending knees, I ain't going to. I dig no more taters. I decline, I ain't going to pick no peas. Because everything is on the phone, you know you got to go. I'll get down on your bending knee.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Morning with Plain Gardening. We got a couple of folks here. Chris Francis, great arborist, works in our area, good friend, been working together on a lot of projects for a long time. Peter Toler, our city forester, great guy, really making a difference with our urban forestry program. And we've been talking about trees, and we've been talking about who makes the decisions about trees. You know, we have a tree commission, and they make decisions about what happens to trees in Mobile. And because we like our trees so much, you'd think we think about that tree commission and we've set it up so that it's full of experts about trees, right? Because it's a tree commission. They're the ones who get to make the final decisions, or more or less final decisions, on what happens to trees. And so we've thought this thing out really well, and we got a lot of tree experts on that tree commission. No. Look, I'm going to say this because nobody else is going to say this out loud, so I'm going to say it, and you just get mad at me. The people on the tree commission are great folks, most of them. In fact, 80% of them don't have any experience in trees. Only one of the seven people on that tree commission has any real experience working with trees, and that's Cleve Formwalt. He's a certified arborist. Cleve is retiring in September. Goodness knows he's been doing it forever. We love him. We all learned from him. Cleve is the guy we learn from. But Cleve is retiring. Who's going to be the certified arborist on that tree commission? There's a problem. We may not have any certified arborists who live in Mobile who could serve on the tree commission, because certified arborists don't grow on trees, as we like to say. They are trained. They are professionals. And I don't know how many certified arborists we actually have living in the city of Mobile, and there's no guarantee that any of them will be recommended to serve on the tree commission, because there's no requirement for that. So who provides the expertise to the tree commission? Chris, it seems to me to be fairly smart that if you're serving on the tree commission, and this seems like something you bunch of certified arborists should see to this. It seems like you should have a program for this, for people who are serving on tree commissions, so that you can train them in what are the things to look for trees. Why don't you do that, Chris?
We do, but trying to get people to go to that is a challenge. So we have one coming to Orange Beach in October. And it's a tree and beautification board. And so it's designed for people sitting on tree commissions, tree boards, to give them basically a primer. You know, it's not elementary education, but we don't lose you in the details. And so we're going to cover things like identification and biology and trees and construction and the things that someone sitting on that board would have the basic knowledge to be able to do that job. Trying to get people to go to that is a challenge. The ones that do go to it, they take a lot away from it. Their cities really benefit from that. And it's not things that they already know. There's new knowledge. They can learn about grants. They learn about how to do their job, you know, versus just, you know, kind of holding a political position. So it's there. It's in place. We just got to get people to go to it.
Yeah, and maybe that should be a requirement to serve on the tree commission. That's my thought. I mean, you know, okay, I don't know why you'd want to serve on the tree commission if you don't understand about trees and you don't know anything about trees. But if you're going to serve on the tree commission, at least make that little bit of effort. It's a nice gig in Orange Beach. I've been there before. It's a good bunch of folks to meet. You're going to meet the folks who do the tree work. You get to talk to them, and you learn a whole lot about what causes problems for trees. That's something we ought to write into our requirements for serving on the tree commission. And I'm just going to say that out loud. For people to think about. Hey, Peter, what are we doing? What are we going to do about getting a certified arborist on the tree commission? How are we going to fix that?
Well, we're going to have to do a pretty good in-depth hunt for one because it's desperately needed. We have a very large tree canopy in this city, and we've got to search out one for the tree commission.
What if there's not one in Mobile in the city limits?
Well, that's a problem because with this city, with this old of a canopy, you've got to be able to make educated decisions about trees, especially when somebody comes in front of you. Granted, there's a staff representative at the Tree Commission, myself, who's ISA certified, but the commission themselves needs to be able to make an educated decision.
Yeah, so what happens? Do we have does the city law, and we're running out of time, but let's quickly, does the city law require that these positions be filled by people within the city?
From my understanding, yes. That's from my understanding.
Okay. Yeah, so we're assuming that. We may need to modify that law to allow certified arborists who don't live within the city limits. We know we've got some certified arborists who live in Saraland. We know we got one who lives over in Baldwin County because he's in the studio with us. We know we have some others that live in the area. We need, but we don't know that any of them live within the Mobile city limits except for Cleve Formwalt. And Cleve Formwalt, he's just tired. He's off. He's going out. So he's not going to be there for us.
Yeah, Cleve said he's going fishing.
These are things we need to if Cleve's going fishing, man, I appreciate that. So we've got to, if you care about trees, you've got to think about this ordinance. You've got to think about the ordinance that protects them. We have to think about, like, we have to think about the roots because you're not thinking about those. We also have to think about this ordinance and how it works and how we get the right representation on the tree commission so that good decisions are made about trees, or it's going to haunt us every time. It's going to haunt us every time. It's difficult being on the tree commission when things like this come up. You need the expertise. You need the knowledge. We need our tree commissioners to attend these training programs that are set up by
Alabama Urban Forestry Association.
Yeah. Thank you. That's their official name.
Yeah.
And it's at Orange Beach. It's in October. It's a cool little space. It's something we should go for. We should make sure the city pays for it if there's anything. And you can eat good food while you're down there and enjoy the beach. Here we go. We had a good show. Guys, thanks for coming on this morning.
Always enjoy
it. Good to talk to all of you. We'll be back next week.
Thank you, Bill.
See you later.
The curtains hanging in the window in the evening on a Friday night. Little light is shining through the window, lets me know everything's alright. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind. Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind. See the paper laying on the sidewalk, a little music from the house next door. So I walk on up to the doorstep, through the screen and across the floor.
Summer breeze.